From KQED and the California Report, this is Capitol Notes, a weekly roundup of California politics from the state capitol in Sacramento.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Hello and welcome to the final edition of the Capitol Notes podcast for 2007. We should have music or something. There should be, you know, I got to get campy with this, you know, Auld Lang Syne or something like that.
Something.
Something.
Bhutan. Well, never mind. Never mind. Never mind. My musical selections are, you know.
Maybe that's a podcast. Maybe we should have a playlist.
How about a little Wagner, you know, Flight of the Valkyries? Apocalypse Now?
I was thinking something a little more edgy from you, Anthony. I'm John Myers from KQED and the California Report, and that music critic you heard, of course, is our friend Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, as we are here for the, as I said, the week ending December 21st, so the last podcast for the year. No reason to do one next Friday because everyone will be stuffing themselves with food and sitting at home watching bowl games and no politics to talk about.
That's right.
As we wrap up the year, we want to talk about a couple of the things that happened this week, and then I think wrap up with a couple of the big trend issues or stories that we saw that were really interesting in 2007. Anthony's got a good wrap-up of the whole year that was in this week's edition of Capitol Weekly, which we'll link on the website so you can see. You've got, like, color photos and everything.
It's, you know, fancy. We spared no expense.
A month-by-month, blow-by-blow of the year that was. Okay, well, let's talk about this week first of all. We had a lot going on in healthcare. On Monday, the State Assembly passed the big, giant, much-talked-about health care reform plan that Speaker Fabian Nunez and Governor Schwarzenegger had agreed on. And then they had a lovely photo op after the vote. And then the health care reform plan sat there because it is not moved forward in the Senate yet. And it's a bit of a half accomplishment or something.
Well, Senator Don Parada from Oakland, the Senate leader, has been skeptical about the future of the health care plan. You know, he's, I think, still trying to find his voice about where exactly his caucus is. He has said that he wants to review the funding mechanisms in the bill, which will all be part of an initiative in November. We can get to that in a minute. And how it reconciles with the state budget. The state budget, which is expected to have a $14 billion hole. And Parada's take is that he wants to see how existing healthcare services are going to be affected in this year's budget before embarking on a new $14 billion program. That said, the bill has been set for a hearing in the Senate January 16th. In the Senate Health Committee, that timeline could change one way or the other. I'm sure that there will be tremendous political pressure on Parada to move the bill.
Well, I was going to say there was political pressure on Senator Parada all this week. I mean, at every juncture, there was the, you know, looking forward to it being heard in the Senate and, you know, constant, you know, repetition of that message as the governor and Nunez traveled the state to these different events.
Look, and Parada is being squeezed on all sides. I mean, he's being squeezed by Nunez and Schwarzenegger who want this deal through the Senate. But he's got ideological differences within his caucus to deal with. On the left, he has Sheila Kuehl, who's the proponent of single-payer health care, who is the chair of the Senate Health Committee, who I talked to this week, or I talked to people familiar with her thinking this week, and said that she probably won't vote for this bill, that there probably is no way that she can vote for this bill. On the other side, one of the linchpins in this bill is a $1.50 to $2 per pack tax on tobacco products. And there are a lot of senators, moderate senators, who have had support from the tobacco industry who might bristle at the tobacco tax. You know, Parada has to navigate, in raw numbers, he has a much smaller margin, even though percentage-wise he has a larger margin.
Right.
If he loses Kuehl on the left, he can't afford to lose four senators. And, you know, in the name of party discipline, Parada could probably get it through, but it's going to be a different challenge than the speaker had in the assembly.
You know, and those political ramifications are certainly important. And I think, you know, what Senator Parada has said about the policy implications also are worth noting. I mean, it is somewhat jarring to the average person to understand how we enact a $14 billion health care reform plan. At the same time, we have fiscal problems in the state, major fiscal problems.
To the tune of $14 billion, coincidentally.
And then also just this notion, too, that, you know, if part of the solution to the state's budget problems is, in fact, some reducing of services or spending on what we pay for health care for the most vulnerable, then how do you do that when you've just talked about how important it is to protect those people? I mean, it's a messaging problem, if nothing least, but it's also, I mean, there's a policy issue, as I started to say.
Yeah, and these are real questions that are being asked not only by Senator Parada, but by Senator Denise Tucheney, one of the aforementioned moderates from San Diego, chair of the Budget Committee. Look, this is not – Parada's take is that we're not going to rush this through. There are reasons that the speaker is calling for this to be rushed through. It's because they have to start the initiative process. Now, keep in mind, they don't need the bill's passage to start the initiative process,
But if they don't – I mean, this was a whole big source of debate. You know, what Anthony's talking about, for those of you who didn't see this, is that the funding for health care reform has to be put on the ballot as an initiative because Republicans wouldn't vote for anything that smelled like a tax increase.
Right.
And so the tobacco tax, the employer fee, and the hospital fee all have to go on this ballot initiative. But what was fascinating about that whole dynamic – on Monday, and Anthony, I don't know if you picked up on this too, is there was one group of people saying, well, now that we know what's in this bill in the assembly, now that we know the language of the bill, we can start writing the initiative. Then there was another school of thought that said if the Senate wants to tinker with the bill, once it comes back, the initiative could be, you know, the language you crafted could be worthless in a way because you'd have to retinker the financing.
And there are a whole series of, and this bill will not move through the Senate without amendments. I don't think there's any way.
You heard it here first.
You know, but there are deadlines coming up. The initiative has to receive a title and summary from the Attorney General's office by February 14th. That would give them, I think it's 67 days to gather 1.2 million signatures. I mean, it's going to be tight. And so that is part of the political pressure being put on Parada now. Wow, that was a lot of P's. Political pressure put on Parada. Say it 10
times. It's an alliterative podcast.
Political pressure put on Parada. Peter picked up pipe of – never mind. But that is the pressure being put on Parada. That's one of the ways in which he's being squeezed, and it'll be interesting to see how he navigates this
and
in the coming weeks.
And, of course, as we know, the smaller amount of time you have to qualify an initiative to gather those signatures, the more expensive it gets.
Absolutely.
You know, every fewer days that you've got racks that price up that you've got to go raise money to get those signatures that much more.
You know, I do think there's another political force at work here, and we mentioned this in Capital Weekly this week, is that I think that if this gets out of the legislature, this will be a momentum builder for it's a big legislative accomplishment that Speaker Nunez can point to as he gears up the campaign for Proposition 93, the term limits initiative, which would allow both Senator Parada and Speaker Nunez to continue in office, even though as of now they're both scheduled to be termed out next year. I do think that is part of the calculus. I don't doubt that all the parties involved do want genuine health care reform. They have been working on this for a long time. But remember, I mean, we have changed the way that we select our president in order to get this term limits initiative on the ballot. And I think that it's very important for the speaker to have this accomplishment under his belt as that campaign begins.
That's an important point that I know we're going to come back to before the podcast is over. On this notion of the initiative and the financing of it, I did a piece that aired on – goodness, I've forgotten my days – on Thursday on the California Report, looking at the hurdles that could possibly be in front of the financing part. One, and it's fascinating as I sat through and calling people and doing the research on it. One is the employer fee, of which there is not unanimity in the business community about how they feel about it. Larger employers have less of a problem. Smaller employers have more of a problem. As it was pointed out in the piece that I did, a gentleman named Joel Fox, which political insiders will know, used to run the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association and now runs a group called the Small Business Action Committee, and is a longtime supporter of Arnold Schwarzenegger, one of Arnold's anti-tax supporters. And I'll get to that in a moment. But Fox pointed out to me that you do have a problem that there's no indexing for inflation in this employer fee. And because the fee is based on the dollar amount of an employer's salaries, you know, and not the number of workers, then just by inflationary pressures, you know, a small business person's payroll going from $250,000 one year to $255,000 pops them into the new bracket for health care contributions that they comes out of their pocket. You know, and so I think there's going to be a business issue to see how the business community comes down on it. The tobacco companies are not terribly thrilled with this. And let's not forget that. Let's not forget that Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds spent a combined $62 million to beat back the last tobacco tax on the initiative in 2006.
And there was just a big fight in Oregon, which they successfully beat back a tobacco tax.
And then let's also, and then the third part of that was the hospital fee, which the hospital fee is supposed to trigger some federal money to come along. And there are some people who wonder, with all the fiscal pressures and budget problems in Washington, whether we get all of that money. And so, I mean, there are a lot of risks to the finances.
Well, and there's more, too. I mean, the political equation here, the question, if the question in the healthcare debate was who's going to be covered and who's going to pay for it, the question in the political debate is who's going to be opposed and who's going to pay for the campaign in favor. Right now we're seeing the strongest support for the speaker's plan and the governor's plan coming from the service employee unions, SEIU and AFSCME, the federal, county, and state municipal employees.
I was wondering if you were going to get that.
I got it. The American Federation of State County Municipal, AFSCME.
But anyway.
but, you know, the question is, will labor take enough ownership of this plan to fund it, to provide the multi-million-dollar campaign that it's going to need to pass? On the other side, you've got Blue Cross, which is threatening to run its own initiative to help. And really, the political equation here, again, is the more confusion there is on the ballot, the easier it is to kill everything. We saw it with prescription drugs.
The more likely voters say no.
We saw it in 2005 with prescription drugs, where pharma, their technique for beating back a consumer group-driven prescription drug initiative was to launch their own initiative and implicitly encourage voters to
throw up their hands and say no to all of it.
Which is exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And we'll see that. I think we'll see Blue Cross try to do that in November, unless the governor knows something that we don't.
You think that they would put another initiative on, or you think they would?
Yeah, okay. I do. And we also saw,
first also,
we also saw this week that the California Nurses Association is threatening to put their own initiative on, a single-payer initiative. And even though they may not have the money that a Blue Cross does or that an SEIU would, again, the presence of these three healthcare initiatives, I think, would lead to such an environment of confusion that, you know, that the passage of the initiative becomes difficult at best.
Mm-hmm. And then I was going to say, you know, you were talking about those organized labor groups that are in favor of this, but there's one large organized labor group that's not. It's the California Labor Federation.
Right. And it's they're not opposed.
They're not opposed, but they were not standing there with them. And you know, it. In other words, also known as organized labor, is not all on the same page here.
Well, and look, this mirrors the split that we see nationally. There was a big split a couple of years ago between the service employees, SEIU, and the AFL-CIO, the major umbrella group for organized labor. Nationally, SEIU left the Federation of Labor, and I think we're seeing some of those same divisions here. We have the AFL-CIO in the form of the California Labor Federation staying off the bill, staying neutral on the bill, and SEIU in strong support. People I've talked to said the only reason the Labor Fed is neutral at all is because SEIU still has a voice inside the Labor Fed, and they were able to force neutrality. But I do think, again, when you go back into who's going to pay for it, I mean, I think you can rule the AFL-CIO out if the bill stays in its current form.
And the governor's biggest contributors to his political efforts have been the business community, by and large. And if the business community is not all on board here, you wonder what that does, too. I mean, I only go back as to what I just mentioned, the person I talked about, Joel Fox, who I asked him, I said, since you endorsed the governor for his reelection and you worked on the recall in 2003, what do you think about Arnold Schwarzenegger's record on tax issues now? You know, he didn't dodge the question, but he said, you know, the governor thinks big. I applaud him for thinking big. I just don't agree with him on this.
Yeah.
And that could be a problem, too, when you go to raise money.
Yeah. And remember, the restaurants are out there with their proposal, a sales tax. So, this thing is a long, long way from over. And I think that the political calculation here, both for February and for November, gets complicated and very high stakes.
It's a big, muddy mess.
That's why we're in business.
That keeps us employed.
We're mud wallowers.
Well, at the end of this healthcare debate this week, you know, as the vote happened, the assembly, Anthony, you wrote this week about some of what was going on behind the scenes and some of this notion that you've alluded to here. You like talking about the term limits initiative, Prop 93. It's one of your favorites. I've gone back, looked at all the podcasts. I am
strangely obsessed.
You are the term limits initiative man, much to the chagrin of some of the Prop 93 people.
Probably on both sides.
But you wrote about it a little bit this week about what was going on behind the scenes. Talk about it.
Well, I do think there is a connection, as I alluded to earlier, that there is. That's part of the calculus here, is that you cannot separate any major legislative initiative from the term limits equation. Now it hung over the entire session. I mean, think about what happened in order to allow this initiative to exist. California moved its presidential primary, which set off a domino effect nationwide. So now we have a nationally front-loaded primary system, in large part so that they could create an extra vote to get this term limits initiative on the ballot in February, so that current incumbents could run for re-election in the June primary, and then hopefully stay in office come November. So I don't think that you can, because of the great lengths to move heaven and earth that the legislature went through to get this initiative on the ballot, or legislative leaders, I should say, that you cannot look at this legislative year without looking at it through that prism. I think that other people would say that's unfair, overly cynical and skeptical, but I don't think that it's
unfair, overly cynical and skeptical.
See, thank you from the peanut gallery. You sound like the speaker's office.
I'm sure you'll get a phone call. But I mean, if nothing else, and I think actually you lay out a pretty good case for all of that, but if nothing else, it just goes to show that there is no way to remove political ramifications from major policy decisions.
No.
It's true throughout history, and it is playing itself out again here.
Right, absolutely. And so we just highlight that. I mean, it's not something that the speaker is ignorant of. It's not something that the pro tem is ignorant of, and it's not something that the governor is ignorant of. Do we give it too much focus? I mean, to point it out, do I think it's the only thing driving healthcare reform? No. I do think that the negotiators involved definitely want to move the ball on healthcare and want to see a large portion of the state's uninsured get some kind of health insurance. But I do think that the term limits component of this is part of the motivation.
Before we leave the subject of term limits, let's talk briefly about something else that happened this week. A fairly significant voice against term limits came forward, which is the California Chamber of Commerce, or against the term limits initiative, I should say. The Cal Chamber released their recommendation from their board of directors, which is urging a no vote on Prop 93. And, it was interesting, obviously, for a couple of reasons. One, because the chamber is a big political player, but also because the chamber president, Alan Zarenberg, was one of the original people who said he supported the term limits initiative back when it was being circulated for signature, said it's a good idea. And so how do you reconcile the two? Well, the reconciliation this week was that Zarenberg made it known that the reason he changed his mind, and maybe the chamber might change their mind, was because we didn't have redistricting reform.
That
the two had to go together to make Prop 93 worth voting yes. Anthony is shaking his head or thinking here. You are the term limits expert, so
I think that that's a bit of revisionist history on Zarenberg's part. Look, in February there was no such qualification. Certainly in the stories that were written about it at the time, there was no linkage of term limits to redistricting, or it wasn't qualified in the way Alan was quoted in February. And so to go back and so I just think this whole thing makes Zarenberg look bad. It makes the chamber look unreliable. I mean, we reported this week that the person leading the charge inside the chamber to vote against Prop 93 was Pete Wilson, former Governor Pete Wilson, who is now a member of the chamber board. He's a new appointee to the chamber board, and I think was successful in convincing the board itself to come out against 93. Wilson himself came out against 93 this week, citing the linkage between term limits and redistricting.
Right.
I don't doubt that is Pete Wilson's position. I do, and I don't necessarily doubt that it's Alan Zarenberg's position. But that qualification was not, at least it wasn't reported in February. A spokeswoman for the chamber this week said, well, we meant it all along. I'm not sure I buy it. I think that this is a political embarrassment might be strong, but it certainly does raise some questions about the control Zarenberg has over the chamber board.
Well, and let's just cut to the chase on this one, if we might, because, you know, while all of us who are political junkies can, you know, go back and forth of interest about the California chamber and where they stand on it, I mean, to the average person, I don't think that's going to be the issue. The right. overriding big, giant question mark about where people stand on Prop 93, I believe, still is the governor. What does Arnold Schwarzenegger do about this initiative, which would allow Nunez and Parada, the two Democratic leaders, to stay in office longer? Right. Does he support it? Does he come out in opposition? Does he stay silent on it, which could be difficult for a number of reasons? But, you know, this goes back to that tie of policy. You know, if in fact the governor and Nunez have developed this working relationship, perhaps the governor would like to keep Fabio Nunez around in the assembly as somebody he trusts to negotiate. On the right. other hand, you know, he didn't get redistricting reform through the legislature, which is what he said he wanted. Right. And I still think at the end of the day, the voters will only notice what Arnold says about this beyond the campaign that's going to be run.
Well, and if that's true, I mean, I've made the case before that if there was a health care deal that the governor almost had to support 93. I mean, maybe that's not true. But I mean, look, you've got the governor who's bucked the business community in order to get this bill through, is going to have an expensive campaign in November that's going to be largely funded with union money. And these are the same unions that ran the campaign against him in 2005. He needs a liaison to the labor community for this initiative to pass. He needs a champion. He needs Speaker Fabian Nunez, not former Speaker Fabian Nunez, who's going to be unemployed, the day the election happens. I think that it is in the governor's interest now, if the governor wants to get this health care initiative passed in November, it is in his interest to have Prop 93 pass and have Fabian Nunez continue to be the Speaker of the Assembly. I think that he's cast his lot with Nunez, as you've said.
So in which case, I mean, he really has to go out there and campaign for it, and from what you're saying. I mean, he's got to put the black jackets that he wears with the vote yes and whatever back on and hit the trail. He can't, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is, under the analysis that you've laid out, he couldn't just say, yeah, I think it's a pretty good thing and be done with it. He's got to get out there and really push it.
I don't know. You know, the governor's a big boy. He can do whatever he wants. But, you know.
That's the understatement of the year, yes.
You could quote me on that one. that's my read on it. Whether or not that happens, or, you know, whether or not this thing actually ever gets to the ballot, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, you know, the governor has proven himself to be unpredictable in many ways, but, so we'll just wait and see what he does on 93.
You have created a podcast here that is full of predictions, Anthony.
Oh, no. Well, it's a year-end thing, right?
Yes.
Isn't that what you're supposed to
do?
Yeah.
It's either predictions or New Year's resolutions, and I don't think that we're in the position to do resolutions, so we'll just, do the predictions. Well, let's talk, speaking of predictions. I mean, we had bandied about before we sat down to start talking here for the podcast about looking forward to 2008 or, you know, messages we took from 2007. You've talked pretty extensively so far about one of those, which is this notion that we have a February 5th primary that, we'll see how history judges moving that primary forward to make California relevant in the presidential game versus the term limits initiative and all these other things. But one of the things that happened in 2007 and is going to be one of the overriding themes of 2008, again, is the state's fiscal problems. This is clearly the largest budget problem Arnold Schwarzenegger will have faced as governor since the one he inherited from Gray Davis. $11, $12, $14 billion, depending on who you talk to at this point. Here on Friday, as we record this, the governor, made it official that he'll declare a fiscal emergency, something new, a power that he has from Proposition 58 back in 2004, that he'll declare that emergency in early January. A lot of folks in the legislature are already realizing, that this is going to be very tough. A lot of the easy solutions have been done. That's kind of a cliched comment around here, but it's true. And then we're getting word this here on Friday with a nice exclusive piece in the Sacramento Bee that the Schwarzenegger administration is considering, frankly, something that I think is very different from what the governor has said in the past about the prison crisis.
Right.
This notion of releasing prisoners early.
Right, releasing 22,000 prisoners as part of a cost savings plan. Well, it's a double whammy. It's the cost savings, but it's also the federal the panel of federal judges, which has basically told the state to either increase capacity or set people or
right.
that they were going to release people themselves. It's going to be another big – it's going to be part of the budget fight. It's going to be another big fight, again, between the governor and his own party.
Well, and I was going to say, if there's anything that strikes me from this year carrying forward to next year from a legislative state capital kind of thing, it is this this relationship or lack thereof between the governor and legislative Republicans.
Right.
I mean, we clearly saw this summer Republicans in the Senate stand their ground and hold the budget up for, I've already forgotten, a month, 6 weeks?
It's the end of August, right?
So yeah, for what amounted months. To about $700 million in cuts. And boy, you take $700 million and now you look forward to a budget deficit that's, you know, in the billions. And how long is this budget debate going to last? Because we are at a fundamental philosophical difference here about the size of government and what government does. And it certainly puts the governor in the hot seat here. You know, the anti-tax champion, as he has kind of put himself out there in the public, having to determine what is the appropriate level of revenues for the state, you know, or can he cut far enough down to get where he's got to go with Democrats in charge?
Yeah, and it's going to be a decision about whether he finds a way out of his no new taxes. I don't know if no new taxes pledge is accurate, but certainly that's been his mantra.
Well, he's, you know, what's interesting, though, is he did say at the very beginning of running for office that it was not a completely never thing. It was if we had a crisis or a disaster or something. Now, the question will be, are we in a crisis or a disaster
now? According to the governor's office, we are officially in a crisis.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see if tax increases are part of his budget plan on January 10th. And if so, if those have any chance at all of getting through the legislature.
You think it'll be a productive year or a non-productive year in 2008? Put you on the spot again for a prediction as far as the legislature and the governor and getting things done. Or as I feel, as my prediction is, the budget overshadows everything.
It could very well overshadow everything. And we could be looking at a situation, you know, it's been talked about for a long time about having a budget eventually go to the ballot. Maybe this is the year. I mean, if you can't get anything through the legislature on a two-thirds majority and you still need two-thirds to raise taxes or to pass a budget, this may be the year that voters end up voting on their own state budget sometime in November or, who knows, even sometime before. The governor could always call a special. He's been known to do it before.
Yeah. Well, it's a full employment act for people like you and me.
Yes. Sad though that may be.
Sad though that may be, because since we have lost several of our fellow reporters this year and the tough times in the news business, but there's no lack of news up here at the Capitol for political junkies. Well, that will do it. That'll not only do it for this podcast, that'll do it for podcasts for 2007. We're probably going to be on a little bit of a hiatus for podcasts for a little while, of which I'll explain more about later. But we'll be back. We'll be back to pontificate and elaborate and have Anthony get nasty phone calls from politicians after they hear the podcast.
That's what I live for.
Do you get those? Does anybody ever call you and say, Anthony?
Nasty is an ugly
Anthony,
word.
You're such a smart aleck.
Some variation on that theme, yes.
Maybe not as polite a version. But anyway, hope you have a happy holidays, as everyone always wishes at this time of the year. And for Anthony York, I'm John Myers. We'll see you next time.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the TL Type S with a 286-horsepower V6 and real-time traffic alerts. Learn more at Acura.com.